Hey everyone, this is James LaBrie from Dream Theater, and you're listening to Prog Rock Digital.
Welcome to Prog Rock Digital.
Hi everyone and welcome back to another episode of Prog Rock Digital. This is episode 1 of season 3, our very first episode back into 2022. I'm glad to be back and I thank you very much for downloading and streaming. Thank you for visiting progrockdigital.com. Please keep those emails coming through. The email address progrockdigital@gmail.com. Now today is an exciting episode. I will be presenting to you my thoughts, my review on the upcoming soon-to-be-released album by Silent Skies titled Nectar, out through Napalm Records, available February the 4th. And I'm also presenting to you a conversation that I had with the pianist from the band, Vikram Shankar. We speak about all things Silent Skies as well as the other half of the band, and that is star vocalist Mr. Thomas England, whom we know also from Redemption and, well, his band Evergrey. We're back just after this quick break. Thank you very much for your support and enjoy. Open
to fire. Paris of Troy, out through Ludos Records, their debut single, Torn Away. True inside. Australian prog at its best. Available for download and stream on all digital platforms.
Hello, this is Mick Box of Uriah Heep, and you're listening to Prog Rock Digital.
The man behind some of the most iconic pieces of art connected to some of the biggest names in rock, Ioannis. Originally from Athens, Greece, in the last 36 years has created over 300 record covers for such clients as King Crimson, Fate's Warning, Uriah Heep, Allman Brothers, Blue Oyster Cult, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Yngwie Malmsteen, Deep Purple, Styx, just to name a few. Be sure to connect with Ioannis at www.dangerousage.com.
Coming July 30th, the re-release of Amarin's Plight, Voice in the Light, featuring Gary Werkamp, DC Cooper, and Nick DiVigilio.
One of the greatest progressive conceptual albums of the 2000s is with us once again.
www.amarinsplight.net.
Out through Lone Wolf Music.
Falsett have released their debut album, We Follow or Lead the Way. Available for download and stream, visit falsett.co.
Album review.
Silent Skies Nectar for release February the 4th via Napalm Records.
Now, it is a thought-provoking, somber, slow, beautiful album. It has a significant European feel to it, and I wouldn't be surprised if we one day see Silent Skies on the Eurovision contest. I give kudos to both Vikram and Thomas, as they are outside-of-the-box thinkers, not afraid to take risks. The album has 10 tracks, with all songs bearing equal weight. However, track number 6, titled Leaving, has the X factor, I feel. In closing, 3 words capture my thoughts on the album. Emotional, dark, and compelling.
An amazing album. Look out for it. Silent Skies. The album is Nectar. Vikram Shankar, welcome to Prog Rock Digital. How are you, man?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a nuts week with the album coming out in this Friday, I guess. So it's like, you know, I can barely, you know, keep my head straight with everything going on. But it's awesome. You know, that's a good problem to have.
It sure is, man. Now, before we get into the new Silent Skies album, I wanted to ask, how is it that you went about putting yourself forward to Thomas England? What sparked an interest in him to elect to, you know, work with you?
Yeah, I didn't put myself forward. He put himself forward to me, which was not something that I could have foreseen. I was, I guess, a junior or a senior in college conservatory at the time, and I didn't really have any credits to my name. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think someone like Tom would be interested in working like somebody with someone like me. But the thing is, I would have been doing piano arrangements of metal songs for like almost a decade at that point, and I'd done some Evergrey songs that I guess Tom had seen through the magic of Facebook. And I guess when Tom saw my performances, he saw that there was some kind of like kindred spirit going on here. There's some shared sense of emotional and musical aesthetics and everything, that we really saw music in much the same way, and we were phrasing and timing in the same way. And it's really unique and special, I think, for him to be able to listen to my playing, not say a word to me, but just through my playing, see that this is a match that should happen. So he reached out to me out of the blue and said, we should make an album together. And I was like, yeah, of course we should. And I couldn't have anticipated that would have led to now two albums and a bunch of other things that we do together as well, with Redemption and video game scoring and all this stuff. So, you know, it's turned out to be the most fruitful musical partnership of my life. And it all started with the Facebook message, which is really cool.
So, Vikram, would I be right in saying that, you know, you're no doubt a fan of Thomas Englund, a fan of Evergrey, Redemption? Let me ask you this. How do you take out or separate the fan from Vikram? How do you place that out of the equation and, you know, look at it from a different perspective, a working relationship, a business relationship? Is that hard? How do you go about that?
Well, on one hand, you kind of don't have to do that, because, I mean, yeah, I think, it, for instance, in the case of Redemption, it's the fact that I've been listening to that band for so many years that helps me get into that mindset when, you know, we're working on the new album and stuff. Like, I it's part of my DNA. And I say the same thing when I talk about Tom and his music that I've been listening to for so long. It's part of my DNA. Mm-hmm. And his music and the way he sings and the way that the band writes music has become a part of who I am as a musician. And I can't turn that off, and I don't want to turn that off, because the fact that we have this shared musical DNA, it's like we've known each other for a decade, although we haven't. And it's like we've been making music together for a decade, although we haven't. So the fan element and the appreciation I have and the respect and the love that I have is, you know, a big part of why it works as well as it does. And I've worked with people with whom I am not fans, and yes, it's nice, but it's different, because being a fan of something, you have a certain emotional intimacy and a certain emotional investment into the music that you don't do if it's strictly, you know, a professional thing. And it's like, they're paying me to do this music and I do it and it's great. But there's, like I said, an investment that comes when you're a fan of something. And so I don't turn that part off, but I guess I also don't think about it, because, I mean, Tom's not just a musical hero. He's been a close friend for a bunch of years, and we make music and we talk every day. And it's like, you know, I am a fan at first and foremost, but, you know, it's become a lot more than that. So I can conceive if, like, you know, someone like, I don't know, James Hetfield were to reach out to me or something, it may be a little bit more difficult to have that separation, because he's like, you know, he's James Hetfield. It's like, he doesn't exist on our plane. He exists on, like, the rock star plane, you know? And I viewed Tom that way, sure, to start with, but Tom has a wonderful way of just, you know, making you feel like you're equals, even though, you know, he's been making Evergrey music as long as I have been on this planet.
Yeah.
He's still, you know, he's so down to earth about it, and he's always looked at me as an equal. He's never looked at me as, like, his minion who's going to execute his solo project or whatever. It's never been like that. It's always been a 50% collaboration and a lot of mutual respect.
The album is set for release February the 4th. titled Nectar, which is the follow-up to the band's debut album, Satellites. Vikram, let me ask you, how different is this album to the first album? And what are some of the noticeable differences? I've heard the album and think it's amazing. You know, give us your take. I mean, you're in the firing line, you're behind the piano. It evokes so much emotion.
Oh, well, thank you for your kind words. It's funny because I was pretty sure that this was a very, very different album. And now we're at the point now where we've been starting to read some amazing reviews of, you know, what we've been doing. And most people seem to feel the same way, that there's a different energy on Nectar than there was on Satellites. And then, of course, there are some people to whom it sounds very, very similar, and it's only a very slight tweak in the formula. And that's the beauty of the individual and the way that every individual person can have their own subjective experience of art. That's a beautiful thing to me.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, I think Nectar is a big step up, and that's not because Satellites is a weak album, because I'm very, very proud of Satellites. But what happened was that we had to kind of figure out what Silent Skies was. And that was not a very easy thing to do, because Tom's been making music for 25 years, but this is a brand new band. It's like he got to be a debut artist all over again. And when you're a debut artist, a big part of what you're doing is you're finding yourself. And we were making a style of music that, not to say that like, oh, we have no equal or anything like that, but there wasn't really a stylistic analog that we could go to YouTube or Spotify and say, hey, you know, check out this artist. We like this. Let's do exactly that. We couldn't really find an artist like that, because we were taking this kind of cinematic classical thing. And the key thing with that music is that it has a certain emotion and a mood, but it doesn't really have a song structure that is like what we do, because a lot of it is instrumental. And whether it's instrumental or not, it's normally functional music for, you know, film or TV or something. It's not written to be, you know, songs on standalone albums. And we very much wanted to make songs with strong melodies and hooks that, you know, could be accessible, but also had this inner depth and this emotional resonance to it as well. We had to figure out what it meant to do that. And that's what Satellites was all about. And then when we did Nectar, we knew that. We had this foundation of, this is what Silent Skies is. This is, you know, what we like to do. So let's develop it, and let's start with this foundation and this security and who we are. And let's explore different waters to just make the strongest 10 songs we can. And the defining quality of the process of recording and writing Nectar was, let's make these songs as strong as possible. So what does that mean? It means that if a song sounds like, you know, it would be stronger with some electronic beats and some bubbling percussive synths, things that we didn't really do on the first album, then it's like, okay, let's go into these electronic waters. Let's make things a little bit more synthy. Let's bring in maybe some pop elements or some electronic elements or hip hop elements. It doesn't matter. You know, we didn't have these kind of walls of what Silent Skies could be, what it should be, you know. Silent Skies is us and what we want to make. And that honesty led us to a place that I think was refreshing for us to make. And it seems to be refreshing for listeners as well, which I'm very, very gratified about.
Now, Vikram, you did touch on before about being an equal and being an equal in the band, 50-50. When it comes to all things Silent Skies, obviously you're an equal with the band being a duo, both yourself and Tom, writing songs and so forth. Now, is there the same idiosyncrasies as, say, being in a 5 or 6 piece band? I think I know the answer to that, but if you can just let me know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, I've been in bands that are small. Like my first serious band that I released albums with semi-recently is called Lux Terminus, and it's a trio, so that's pretty close to a duo. And then I've also played in bands with 5 members, 6 members, and of course Redemption has a pretty big lineup as well. So, I mean, the interesting thing about being in a big band is that it's very rare to have a 5-person perfect democracy. Yes. And you can be democratic insofar as everyone is respected, and you should be that way, I think. but someone is inevitably going to take a little bit more of the, you know, the visionary status, just because that's how you get things done. It's a lot easier to get things done when one person is guiding the ship in a certain way and other people are helping to fulfill that. And that's cool. The thing with the duo is that we can have the best of both worlds. We can have that visionary aspect where, you know, I, as one half of this partnership, I have a vision and I know where I want Silent Skies to go. And the thing is, that vision doesn't have to be curtailed by four other people who feel differently. You know, there's one other person. And coincidentally, that one other person is someone who's very similar to me. We have very similar tastes, very similar goals. We like many of the same things. When I write something, chances are if I think it's good, Tom's going to think it's good, and vice versa. So it's the kind of 50% partnership that wouldn't always work just because it's a 50% partnership. You can have a 50% partnership with two strong, you know, individuals who butt heads, and then it, and then it's, you know, even more of a fiery explosion when it all melts down. I mean, pop duos melting down is one of the defining qualities of like the last 50 years of pop music. That always happens. Yes, but if you're lucky enough to have the sort of pairing where, you know, the two people are similar enough that we tend to not butt heads, but different enough that when we do, something really cool usually happens as a result, then, you know, that's, I think that's why it works, because, you know, you only have to convince one person. And so there's a lot of your own ideals and your own tastes that make it onto the final product. Whereas I think in a five-piece band, inevitably it will be a little bit diluted.
So how did you go about recording the album? You're obviously in North Carolina. Thomas is in Sweden. I'm assuming it would have been via, you know, a remote session. Do you want to run through that for us?
Sure. We've always worked remotely. We wrote Satellites remotely as well. And in fact, Satellites we wrote very remotely because we were sending basically emails of music to each other. And in hindsight, that is a ludicrously inefficient way of making an album, because you produce a demo and you bounce it down and you send it to the other person. Because of our time difference, I probably finish it while he's asleep. He wakes up in the morning, he listens to it. Maybe he hasn't had his cup of coffee, I don't know. And then it's, and then there's this disconnect where it's like, you know, maybe he will understand what I was trying to do when I recorded it, but maybe he won't. And then I was trying to find that middle ground through text, because we barely even spoke on the phone while writing Satellites. It's, you know, heinously inefficient. And so the fact that we were able to make such a strong album as we did with Satellites is kind of a miracle. And we did end up recording the piano together. I flew to Gothenburg in 2018 and I recorded all the grand piano, but otherwise it was completely remote. And for Nectar, we actually didn't do anything together. I did the piano on my end. He did the vocals on his end. But we wrote everything very much together on, you know, this wonderful thing, Zoom, which kind of became the defining element of our year last year, was we would spend 4 to 5 hours a day, every day for 3 months together on Zoom. And we were writing and we were producing and recording and doing all of this stuff together, which became so valuable, because it was like, if we wanted to try something, say that's shortening the bridge by four bars, say that's substituting a chord in the chorus to fit the vocal melody better, or say it's, let's try out a Moog synth part, like a bass line. Let's try an arpeggio. Let's try a vocal effect, you know, some kind of robotic vocal effect that's going to sit in the background. We didn't have to wait 3 hours and receive an email and check it out. We waited 5 minutes for the other person to do it, and we listened to it together on Zoom. We had wired our studio so we could hear DAW audio in full stereo quality, so we weren't listening to like cell phone cameras or something. And so we were able to like try stuff and then make stuff work. And the beauty of that is that if you experiment, you know, every experiment in music tends to require some refinement to really work. And so we were able to do that refinement. We were able to try a synth arpeggio and be like, ah, you know, this would be really cool if we just faded it out, or we put a filter on it so it's still there, but it's not so prominent. Okay, cool, that's good. You know, check the box and we'll move on. And so a lot more experimentation passed muster in this process when we were able to make sure everything is really good together. And we're both really happy in the moment with what we were recording. So it's like we were distant geographically, but at the same time, we had never worked closer. And we were also able to get 18 to 20 hour work days because of the time difference. Because when Tom went to bed, I had another 6 hours in the studio. And then when I went to bed, he woke up and he had 4 hours in the morning before I hit the studio. So, you know, we had this amazingly maxed out day where, you know, we're working in our off shifts and then we're working together on Zoom. And so it's not really a surprise to me that we wrote and recorded and produced the album in like 3 months, because it was a very full 3 months. So, I mean, beautifully efficient. And the funny thing was, I guess now a month and a half ago, I was in Sweden and we actually worked together, you know, sitting side by side at the computer for the very first time. We were actually working on a video game score. And it was like, oh man, this is more efficient. All right, you know, this it actually would be better if we sat side by side, because we both work so quickly. Like I'm a ludicrously quick worker, and so I find when I work with other people, I inevitably get just a little bit frustrated that I come up with something, someone say something, play something on the guitar. I'm fortunate to have perfect pitch, so I can immediately play it on the keyboards and come up with a supporting part within a minute. Most people can't do that, and that's no fault of theirs. Everyone's different, but I find that for my workflow, it's really important to have someone who's working as fast as me. And Tom is so fast. So when we sit together, it's like, boom, 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 try this. Like, it probably looks like absolute mania from the outside. And then we had this amazing piece composed in a couple hours. So now it's making me feel like on album three, we probably should work in person. But Zoom was great. I mean, we were able to do something far more fulfilling and interesting to us than we were on satellite. So, I mean, it clearly has value.
How does it feel circumnavigating the pop market? Obviously, you're in good hands with Tom. Is this a safe place for you, for a better word? Is it a natural thing to be writing emotionally driven songs that could be heard in coffee shops or even an upmarket clothing store? Is this your space? Is it something that, you know, comes naturally to you?
I have many spaces, and I think that's why I am the way that I am and why I can't be in one band. Because I really kind of admire people who have been in one band making one style of music for 20 years, and they're completely satisfied. See, that's the thing. That's amazing to me. I so wish I could be that way. But I've always wanted to make 6 or 7 different styles of music. And so it just is natural to me that I'll be in some bands where I can't be in a coffee shop. Like there's no way that Redemption is going to be played in supermarkets.
Of course.
But I mean, you know, I like that style of music too. I love pop music. I love cinematic classical music. I love relaxing things. I listen to a lot of, you know, meditation stuff as well. So it's like, you know, it's great to be able to explore those waters, and I don't have those kind of inhibitions about making stuff that people may not think is like cool or something, because I mean, I think all music is cool. Music is so awesome, man. It's like, why would you not make a certain type of music because someone thinks it's not cool? Like, who cares? If you want to make it, make it. And you're going to be way happier making it than if you stay in your box and you do what the world always thinks of you, and then you have this part of you that you've never been able to explore, and it's stifled. It's going to mean that your main thing is going to probably be a lot crappier for it, because you're not going to feel fulfilled with it. You're going to be itching to do other things, and it's like the world's not letting you do that. I see that happen all the time in the industry, and it's horrible, really. So I'm very fortunate that I've kind of built, you know, quite early in my career, this framework where I can do pretty much any style of music I want to do, and I'm not going to get, you know, chastised for it, and people aren't going to say, you're not metal for making this. I mean, first of all, I don't really care if someone thinks that I'm metal or not. That's kind of irrelevant to me. But at the same time, you know, being able to also make very, very heavy music that is, you know, abrasive and has, you know, screaming vocals and all this stuff. Like, I love that stuff too. So I don't like having the, I don't like people telling me that I can't do something. I think it may be a little childish, but I get a little bit like, no, don't tell me what to do when someone tries to do that. So, you know, in a way, making Silent Sky, if metal is about rebellion, then making Silent Skies is as metal as I'll ever be.
So, Vikram, in terms of topics, writing topics, Silent Skies, you know, are these first-hand experiences, or do you and Tom have to, you know, somehow put yourselves in a position to imagine or act out the narrative, or, you know, is it a case of both?
At the most detached it'll ever be is maybe a secondhand perspective of a loved one. Aside from that, it's always firsthand perspectives. And the thing is, I have some friends who play in, let's say, you know, symphonic power metal bands, which is a cool genre. It, you know, I don't really operate in that world, but I respect people who do. And then maybe they write lyrics that are inspired by quests they did in Dungeons and Dragons or something. And like, that's really cool, because if you can do that and be authentic, if that's who you are, if who you are is that fantasy nerd who wants to tell epic stories, you know, and create that sense of escapism, that's awesome. That's valuable. The thing is, Tom and I aren't really that way. I mean, I've played video games. I like fantasy movies, but that's not like how I express myself. You know, if I was to write a song about Tolkien, it wouldn't be expressing myself, it would be expressing Tolkien, and that's not as fun to me. So for me and for Tom, if we were to make something really honest and authentic, we have to be writing about ourselves. That's just, you know, the easiest way for us to achieve the kind of authenticity that I think makes great music great music. And if people are able to be authentic in fantasy escapism, that's amazing, but you know, we can't do that. So all of Nectar, all of Satellites, I think I'm comfortable in saying most or all of Evergrey, is about that very personal experience of going through the human condition and the ups and downs, I guess mainly the downs of, you know, what it means to be a human being with feelings and thoughts and emotions and relationships and all these things. And so Silent Skies becomes like holding up a mirror and like looking at, you know, you finish the album, then you listen to it, and you kind of understand yourself better through doing that, which is a beautiful thing. I mean, we go through catharsis making it, and it's a blessing to hear that listening to it can provide similar catharsis for some listeners, because that's an awesome thing. And I have a very similar relationship to my favorite music, so to be able to pass that on is really special.
On a final note, the album has, for me, spiritual connotations, and it's blessed with so much. Yet, I feel there's a promise for more moving forward, things that haven't yet been explored. Obviously, you know this better than anyone. Vikram, how far can you stretch the envelope with Silent Skies moving forward? I know you said previously that you don't want to have that stigma of certain genres and so forth. Where are you taking the next one, the next couple, or the next few albums?
You know, it's difficult to say, because something that was interesting about Nectar is that having completed it, I can say quite comfortably that, okay, it has a certain different character from the first album, but we didn't set that course in advance and travel from A to B and achieve something different. It just kind of happened through the process, and the process of writing songs and then being attentive to them and their needs and exploring whatever stylistic conventions you need to fulfill those songs is part of what makes experimentation palatable for people, I think. I think people can tell when you're experimenting for the sake of experimenting, and then it only appeals to, you know, the people who really feed off of hearing things that they know are experimental, and there's a certain bravado and intellectualism to that, which is great. But I think for most people, They love to hear experimentation when it's clear that it was done for a purpose. That's why, you know, the Beatles' best-selling album is the album that they experimented on the most. It's not because, you know, it was experimental. It's because it was experimental and self-expressing and beautiful, you know, and great in all those intangible ways that can reach the population in general. And with Silent Skies, you know, we want to experiment if the songs lead us that way. And so part of remaining true to that process is that it's difficult to foresee what kind of experimentation the next batch of songs is going to take. Yep. I can say that it probably won't sound exactly like Nectar. I don't see us doing that because, I mean, we're so restless in a sense. I mean, when we did Satellites, we did like 18 to 20 songs. We had two albums and we were saying, okay, this is awesome. We can just finish up the second half of songs and we could put out the second album. And you know, we already have this foundation. Then we went up and scrapped the vast majority of that. We only kept one song and it's an instrumental. So we're always writing in the moment and trusting, you know, where the moment takes us. So I think it's clear that there are waters left to explore. And we're both really excited about that. It's like we haven't even released the second album and we're already working on the third because we want to see where it goes. It's almost about the journey more than or as much as the end result. It's like the end result is awesome, but what you experience to get to that destination is just as valuable. When you're making this kind of exploratory music where you're trying to be authentic and express yourself. So I don't know what it's going to exactly sound like, but I know that it's going to be fun to make, and that's what matters.
Well, that was our conversation with Vikram Shankar from the band Silent Skies. Until next time, stay safe, stay prog, and we will chat soon. Bye-bye, everyone.